You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, August 18th, 2015. Scott Burton, your host. I've been joined now in the studio by Ellen Frankenstein. She is a filmmaker who lives in Sitka. Welcome to the studio, Ellen.
Hey, great to be here.
It's nice to have you. You and I had the privilege of working together, and this is how I got to know you last year on Tracing Roots. You did this wonderful documentary about Dolores Churchill, and I just thoroughly enjoyed that. It's nice to have you in the studio. That's going to be showing here on 360 North in the fall. When is that going to be?
About November 10th and 15th. I think we're going to show it along with this great piece that you directed, a companion piece.
That was really fun. So for folks that don't know Dolores, tell us a little bit about that film.
Well, Dolores is this amazing Haida Elder who's the keynote speaker along with her grandson, Donnie, at the coming up AFN meetings. And this is a film with and about Dolores. And the theme of the film or the focus is her kind of on a journey to understand a spruce root hat found up in a retreating glacier sort of between British Columbia and the Yukon. And it's called the Kwadonchi Find, or the Kwadonchi Man. And anyway, we go on a little journey together to learn about the hat.
It is a very cool film. Among other projects of yours are Eating Alaska, which maybe you're most well-known for. Is that right?
Yeah, that's the film that I didn't think Alaskans would actually like it. It's a funny and serious film about a vegetarian trying to figure out what to eat. And raising up all sorts of questions about what it means to eat local and what's happened to local diets with what I call kind of food colonization. And the film, we finished in about 2008 or 2009, and it was a hoot to show it all over the state at different events. And I even got a free trip to Poland to a slow food event. It was really
fun. And well-received. You won some awards for it and everything.
I never won awards for that one.
Okay.
The awards are getting thinner. There's more filmmakers, which is awesome. So the number of awards has gone down.
And we have a clip from that I want to play in just a second, but also Carved from the Heart, about which sort of stars Stan Marsden over in Craig. A very powerful film from what I can see. Yeah. Let's see.
Yeah, I got to say, I've had the pleasure of creating films and collaborating and using films to spark a lot of conversation and sometimes to get in trouble.
I bet. How did you get into filmmaking in the first place?
Probably because I was socially awkward, and I started by doing documentary still photography. It allowed me to stand on tables and run away when I was done. and just because I was questioning, and it's a way to, like, focus on things for a while and think about things and share them and get to go deep, but also then move on.
Absolutely. Let's play a trailer, a piece from Eating Alaska. What do you think?
Sure.
Let's see if I can figure this out here. Okay.
I grew up on the East Coast, living a typical suburban life, eating what my mom cooked and put on the table. As a teenager, I rejected meat and became a vegetarian. Until work took me to Alaska, where not only the scenery was rugged and wild, but so was the way many locals liked to eat.
My mother
went
out hunting with my father. She could shoot a deer, she could skin a deer, and she could pack a deer. So what can you do?
I keep thinking about the ethical way to eat and how you can apply that to where you live.
Cabbage is ours.
Homegrown potatoes. Homegrown celery.
For me, hunting is, if somebody's going to kill an animal for you to eat it, I would rather take the responsibility myself.
I would still choose to give up meat before I gave up the processed foods. There's a basic value in not exploiting animals and the earth.
This is Sadie's favorite snack. This is mine, and I'm never eating this again.
Did you feel bad about killing for a living?
Yeah, hunter-gatherer.
But you're also like a hippie environmentalist.
I don't think it's possible not to be both.
So what is the right thing to have on my plate where I live? Could I pull the trigger to get it?
Squeeze it. Don't pull it. Squeeze it.
Thank you.
I like the look on your face when you pull the trigger on that gun. That's a big gun, like a 30-06 or something, huh?
It was a big gun. Though I know many Alaskans, that's nothing.
Right. So you said that was well-received. What was the biggest takeaway for you after making that film?
Well, I got to say, you know, Car from the Heart was luckily ended up at the Sundance Film Festival. But this film was the only film that I've ever shown where he had chickens and worms in attendance. Because part of why you make films is they really just rearrange the furniture. They're just showing what's already there. It's not really that I'm ever that unique, but it's like moving around so we see. And creating, using it as a tool for engagement, discussion, and more action. So in several communities, including Juneau, we had big events, sustainability kind of fairs, where you try to bring people together and, you know, move to the next thing. The film is only like a little doorway.
Well, interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. What are you excited about right now?
Well, I'm excited because I'm actually here in Juneau to cut down about 7 or 8 minutes out of the 35-minute version of Tracing Roots so it can be broadcast and fed across the country, not just in Alaska, but it'll be fed all over the place. And then I've started this project this summer with the help of some interns. I have this nonprofit called Art Change, and the project is called Frankentweet. And it's not just a film. It's a project about our relationship to technology and all the questions that brings up in this digital age where things are changing so rapidly. And so it involves kind of doing hijinks and what I call digital disruptions and creating conversations, and it'll also be a film. So.
Yeah, I have a clip from that. Should we play that now?
Yeah, and let me set up this clip.
Okay.
One of the things I do is I do arts and schools projects, and I was in Gustavus last fall, and I discovered the teachers had a great discrepancy with the technology, the way they were using it in their classrooms. And what you do as an artist in schools, you're supposed to give a workshop or in-service. So I turned it around and got the teachers talking about technology. And here's a clip from what happened.
All right.
As a text or this film. But when I was in school, a lot of communication with my friends was written in these little notes.
You broke down.
We are old in our conceptions of how friendship works and how communication works is different. I mean, to be able to craft a meaningful message in 140 characters or less, that is a skill.
How many things are posted and sent around the internet that aren't true?
Right.
And that we think, oh, this is fact.
Right.
It's like, wait a minute, no.
When I was a kid, or even 5 years ago, there was such a thing as an unanswered question that existed.
Oh, right.
You know, that does not exist anymore. Mm-hmm. And, like, the children will not accept, I don't know.
Unanswered question.
So, yes, I love the concept of the unanswered question. And then Sybil goes on to tell how a kindergartner told her to ask Siri when she didn't know the answer to something. So, Frankentweet, yeah, it's this project, this interactive project about technology and its possibilities, and as I said, trying to engage people. So I encourage anyone, we have a Facebook page, we have an Instagram. If you go to artchangeinc.org and go to Frankentweet, we have a survey. We're hoping that maybe some schools, we have a challenge video up there, we'll maybe have some students do projects, and we'll post them and share them. Because it is, we're in a very fascinating period. It's like, you know, 1995, whatever, the internet sort of, we all started emailing, and our lives is just the way we communicate, the way young people date, it's all like changing.
And so really, it's a reference to your name though too, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, Frankenstein.
Yes.
Or Frankenstein.
It seemed inevitable as a so-called somewhat artist that I would have to use my name at some point. And this seems like the opportunity because, of course, one interpretation of Frankenstein or Frankenstein is technology getting a little out of control.
Mm-hmm. And so would you say that in general it's an examination of communication right now?
I'd say it's more
social
than communication.
Media?
It's I think as part of this project I got to sit down with the CEO of Twitch, which is a huge thing where people get paid to be video gamers and you get to watch them, and just talked about actually the possibilities of people having kind of right livelihoods of things that really interest them and driverless cars, how that could be and actually a good thing. So it's just thinking we're in a kind of a time capsule like period.
Okay,
that's really
interesting.
Innovative.
And you can find more about that at artchangeinc.org, right?
Yep, and go to Facebook, just Google around for Frankentweet.
I know we have a lot of filmmakers here in Juneau. What would be your advice to them about, sorry, that's very nebulous. either getting into filmmaking or if they're already a filmmaker, how do you make a successful documentary? What's the key?
Oh, I don't know. There's so much more going on. Now technology is much more democratic. Think about what you want. Think about what you want to say. Think about your audience. You know, I think that's the challenge of who's going to use this and how, and be yourself. Be a personality a little bit, you know. There's nothing truly objective, but there's also, I don't know, it's just, yeah, take care. Have fun.
So I think
be serious.
That,
yeah.
Well, that is interesting in your film, sort of your narrative presence. You have to choose how much of yourself to put into the film, how much I, how much Ellen as the as the movie maker, right? Or to leave it alone. It seems like such a tough challenge to choose that. How do you deal with that?
Well, a lot of films I did at first didn't have me in it, but then in Eating Alaska, I was the one who'd wandered from here to there thinking about food issues in a way that was very different than when I started making the film. Actually, I started following some women hunting, and I started asking the sort of in-depth questions about science and how living in a place and its history, how it affected them, and they really didn't answer my questions. And then I realized that, oh, it really was what was going on in my head was that narrative, if that makes any sense.
It does, it does. Well, Ellen Frankenstein, thank you so much for coming on the show today. We're about running out of time here. Is there anything else you want to add?
I just want to encourage people to contact us about FrankenTweet. We have a bunch of videos on there. I'd love to get some other people involved.
All right, and we'll look forward to the world premiere broadcast premiere of Tracing Roots and its companion program this fall.
Well, great to see you again, Scott.
You too, Ellen.
Thanks.
Thank you.
If you've ever spent time in the extreme southern U.S., you may have heard this jumble of sounds coming from open, brushy habitat. What you're hearing is a groove-billed ani. Anis are all black, disheveled-looking birds with drooping wings, spread tails, and shaggy black plumage. Their long tails seem disjointed from their bodies, as if raised and lowered by a puppeteer's strings. The Ani's large, flattened bill spits out these sharp, high whistles, slurred whinings, and various squeaks, pips, and growls. These birds gather in loose groups, and with good reason. They nest communally. As many as 4 or 5 pairs of birds may use one nest, a bulky cup of twigs lined with fresh leaves. When the dominant female Ani begins to lay her own eggs, the other females lay simultaneously. Up to 20 chalky white eggs have been found in one nest. All parents share the duties of incubating and raising the young. Bird Note writers include Bob Sundstrom, Todd Peterson, Dennis Paulson, Chris Peterson, and Ellen Blackstone. I'm Michael Stein.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, August 18th, 2015. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 22 minutes after the hour. And now on the phone with me is Jerry Dugan. He is with AMC, the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association. Did I get that right, Jerry?
You got it.
All right. And so you guys have a free fishing vessel drill conductor workshop coming up here, let's see, about a week from Friday. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. And why don't you tell us a little bit about the class and who would benefit from it?
Well, actually, all boaters would benefit from it, but this one is kind of a little bit oriented more specifically towards commercial fishermen. It's the Coast Guard required drill conductor class, a workshop for commercial fishermen that's required on boats, on fishing boats that fish offshore. And it covers, because it covers cold water survival skills and emergency equipment, flares, firefighting, flooding control, abandoned ship, immersion suits, life rafts, helicopter rescue, and emergency drills. All of those things are relevant to anybody in a boat. But like I said, this one's specifically oriented for commercial fishermen.
Okay. If somebody wants more information, how can they find AMC?
Well, you can find us two ways. Our website's amsea.org, AMSEA.org. And people can find out more about the class and register right online if they want. And if they want to talk to a real person, here in Sitka, we're at 747-3287. And we'd be happy to answer anybody's questions.
Okay.
It's a pretty hands-on course, so it's a pretty active course.
It looks like it's pretty much all day, that Friday, August 28th.
Yeah, it's 8 to 7. It's at the UAS Tech Center at 1415 Harbor Way. And, of course, there'll be a break for lunch. And then we'll, depending on how big the class is, we'll go to, you know, 6, 5, 6, 7 o'clock, depending on how large the class is.
Sounds good. And who teaches this?
This will be taught by Neil Nickerson, I believe, who's the Marine instructor over with the university.
Okay. Sounds like a great class. I appreciate you coming on the show today, Jerry. Is there anything else you'd like to add about it?
Nope. We'll be doing these classes more in the future. We've been doing them for the last 22 years using local instructors and making sure that fishermen have access to this required and desired training.
All right. Jerry Dugan, thank you again for coming on the show today.
Thanks, Scott.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Over. Saturday, August 29th, the Diamond Park Aquatic Center will be hosting the annual Race Back to School Triathlon for children in grades 1 through 5. Check-in is at 8 a.m. with the race beginning at 9 a.m. and entails a 50-yard swim, 1-mile bike ride, and half-mile run. Registration materials available at the Diamond Park Aquatic Center. More information at 586-2782.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, August 18th. It's about 27 minutes past the hour. Scott Burton, your host. I've been joined in the studio by Lindsay Havig. She's the ORCA Program Director. Welcome, Lindsay.
Thank you.
Nice to have you here today. And also Erin Clifford. She's the Youth Activities Coordinator over at ORCA. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Nice to have you both here. Lindsay, there may be a few people that don't know what ORCA is. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so ORCA stands for Outdoor Recreation and Community Access, and we're a program of Southeast Alaska Independent Living. A lot of people know it as SAIL. And we offer recreation opportunities for people with disabilities.
Okay. And what would you say are a couple of your flagship programs? What might people recognize from the community?
Well, we have actually a big ski program in the wintertime, probably our most visible program. But then on the summertime, we also do a lot of outdoor activities like summer kayaking, rock climbing, biking, all just adapted to whatever needs people have.
Okay. And you're located in Salmon Creek, is that right?
Correct, over by the hospital.
But you guys are all over the community with your van and kayaks and everything else, right?
Definitely, yep. We try to get out there as much as possible.
Okay, so what's going on these days? What are you up to?
Well, I'll get that over to Erin. We've got something, a couple of activities and events coming up this week.
Yeah, so tomorrow we're having a youth open house for anyone who's interested in ORCA's after-school programming, which is officially starting next week. So the open house is at the Twin Lakes Shelter from 5 to 6:30. There's going to be food and music, a chance to try out some adaptive equipment and bikes, and you get to meet Lindsay and I, and it should be an awesome time.
So what age group, sorry, you may have just said this.
It's for youth, so a lot of it is elementary school, middle school, and high school age students. But anyone who's interested in volunteering or just pretty much getting involved can also stop by.
All right, and what can people expect? You said some hot dogs and food or something?
Yeah, we also have tie-dye, which is going to be a blast, and some music and just great people.
And what day again was this?
Tomorrow, Wednesday.
Tomorrow, Wednesday from 5 to 6:30, and did you say Twin Lake Shelter?
Yep.
Cool. All right, what else is going on?
So this upcoming Saturday, this part of our Learn to Adapt series, we're making outreach to people, especially with physical disabilities or injuries, in a couple different capacities. In the wintertime, a lot of times we do a Learn to Adapt ski day. We do a Learn to Adapt kayak day in the summer. And this is the first time we're doing a Learn to Adapt adaptive rock climbing event. And it's coming up this Saturday, August 22nd at 4 p.m. At the Rock Dump Climbing Gym. And we will have adaptive rock climbing harnesses for people who maybe use a wheelchair or maybe have an amputation or some other disability or injury incurred, and we'll be there to help them out too. A lot of technical assistance as well will be provided to those that are interested.
Will there be a cost for that event?
Nope. Both events we mentioned today are free. Just trying to get people involved and interested and out recreating.
Okay. Are you still looking for volunteers? I know you are sometimes.
Definitely. Always looking for volunteers. Our ski program is really popular with volunteers, but we look for them all year round. If people have any interest, we can train them up on the kind of equipment that we use. It really just takes someone that wants to be outdoors and helping people out.
Lindsay, you've been doing this for a while, right? Working for ORCA?
Yeah, about 7 years now.
Wow. Wow. What keeps you in this field? You seem to enjoy it.
Yeah, it's really just fun to share your passion with people. The outdoors is a huge passion in my life, and I know that a lot of people don't get that opportunity based on their situation, their ability, and they think it might not be possible for them. And so I just like to help people get out there and have a good time, and I feel like living a healthy lifestyle, recreation is a huge part of that, and it's fun to get people involved.
Erin, you just moved to town, I take it?
Yeah,
Jesuit volunteer.
Last Saturday.
Well,
so.
Welcome. What are some of your first impressions of Juneau and
it's,
ORCA?
It's a little rainy. no, Juneau's been amazing. Like, everyone is very supportive, very welcoming. I have the best job here, so everyone in my office has been awesome, and I just love it here so far.
All right. Well, welcome.
Thank you.
If somebody wants more information on ORCA, Lindsay, where should they get it?
Well, you can go to the website, sailinc.org. We'll have information on there, as well as you can always call the office, 586-0104.
And just a reminder that SAIL is Southeast Alaska Independent Living, right? And
yes.
ORCA is under the umbrella of SAIL.
Correct.
Okay. Anything else either of you would like to add?
Stop by the Rock Dump Saturday, 4 p.m.
All
love
right.
to see ya.
Great. Thanks, you too. to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, August 18th. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 42 minutes after the hour, and I have been joined in the studio now by Sadie Ridling and Terry Tibbett, and they're both part of Compassion in Action. Welcome to the studio, you two.
Thanks.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, it's nice to have you in the studio. So you're here. There's going to be a fundraiser on Wednesday at the Gold Town at 6:30, and it's a benefit for the Nepal earthquake victims. Tell us how you two got involved with that, with this organization.
Well, there's a local group here in town that practices together, and they are students of Khentral Say Lodra Rinpoche, and who is from Tibet, and he has 25 different student groups around the country. And he was real interested in helping the victims of the Nepal earthquake. And he had some particular students in a place called Lung Tong Village, where this entire village was completely covered by rock and ice slide. And so because he had students there, he was real interested in helping rebuild that village. So he asked all his students around the U.S. and other places to come together and do fundraisers or do what we could to help send some money that way and to help rebuild the village. So did that answer your question?
Yeah, we're getting there.
Okay.
And Sadie, how did you get involved?
So I got involved as part of just practicing with the Buddhist group here in town, and then hearing about the Compassion in Action that was started by the Katog Choling, which is the main group that Khentral Rinpoche has, and just sort of working with the community here to help out.
Absolutely, and I think we all remember April 25th was that devastating earthquake. Is that right? And some 450,000 people displaced, close to 10,000 died. Just awful. So, what are you going to be doing on Wednesday at the Gold Town, and how can we all help?
So at 5:30 is actually when we're going to kick off the silent auction. It's going to have massages and Tibetan items, some artwork that's for sale in that silent auction. And then at 6:30 is when they're going to have the show. We're asking people to put either a $10 to $20 donation to come see the show. It's about nuns of Tibet and kind of how they persevered through rebuilding their nunneries and monasteries over there. So helping out with donations is always good. There's also tickets available that you can buy even if you're unable to go to the show, just as a kind of a donation. You can also go online and help out.
Okay. Can you tell us a little bit about your local group and how big it is? Is it called a Sangha? Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. It's called a Sangha, and it's just kind of the Sanskrit word for kind of community and association. We practice. They also host Khentral Rinpoche when he comes to Juneau, and to, I believe, Whitehorse. They do some help with that as well. And then they host teachings that he'll do with watching them together as a group and just practicing once a week together as well.
Okay. Will you remind us once more about the details on Wednesday and how they can help, and also if there's a website that we can go to, anything like that?
So the silent auction is going to start at 5:30 on Wednesday. It's going to be at the Gold Town Nickelodeon Theater, and then the show is actually going to start playing at 6:30. Donations are all accepted, and then we're going to have refreshments starting with the silent auction as well. That's going to be like tea and different cookies as well. And then the website?
There's no website, but I think just coming to the event. Did you mention the slideshow?
No, I haven't.
So there's also a slideshow that it's real short, a narrated slideshow, just a few minutes of from a person who was from the village of Lung Tong and who is Khentral Rinpoche's student, and she is narrating some photographs, narrating over the top of photographs that show kind of what the village looked like before and what it looks like after, and just talking about some of the devastation. And she had lost 30 family members in the devastation that happened to the village. So I haven't seen that yet, but it'll be, I'm sure, moving.
Okay. Terry or Sadie, thank you both for coming in today. Is there something else that you'd like to add?
It's at Gold Town Nickelodeon, starting at 5:30 in silent auction. Movie starts at 6:30, and it's tomorrow night, August 19th. Thanks.
All right. You're welcome. Thanks, Terry. Thank you, Sadie.
Yeah, thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 18th of August, 2015. It's the birthday of Salieri, the composer Antonio Salieri, born in the Republic of Venice in 1750, who got a bad rap in the play Amadeus by Peter Schaeffer. Schaeffer portrayed Salieri as a rival of Mozart who was jealous of Mozart, and some versions of the story even accuse Salieri of poisoning Mozart. But Salieri was a successful composer, wrote popular operas, had a nice home life, wife, 8 children, gave free lessons to students. He went to visit Mozart when he was dying. He attended Mozart's funeral. Salieri died in 1825, for which he had composed his own Requiem 20 years before. It's the birthday of Margaret Murray, born in Seattle, 1902, went to the Alaska Agricultural College and School of Mines, where she met her husband, Olaus. They spent 8 months traveling around Alaska by boat and dog sled, and Margaret Murray wrote a memoir of their early days together, Two in the Far North. She was instrumental in the formation of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge and the passage of the Wilderness Act. It's the birthday of Meriwether Lewis, the Lewis of Lewis and Clark, born just outside Charlottesville, Virginia, 1774. Clark was the outgoing one, and Lewis was quiet and meticulous. He was the one who kept the journals, recorded everything they saw, and when the account of the expedition was published, most of it was Lewis's work. He was paid well for being on the expedition, got 1,600 acres of land. He was made governor of the Louisiana Territory, but Meriwether Lewis was prone to depression, alcoholism, and he died in 1809, probably by his own hand. And it was on this date in 1920, the 19th Amendment to the Constitution was ratified, which gave women the right to vote. It had passed both houses of Congress the year before. It was sent to the states to be ratified. It all came down to Tennessee. It was a very close battle. The vote seemed to be tied, 48-48. But the tie was broken by a young legislator named Harry Byrne, 24 years old. He had said he was opposed to the amendment, but he voted in favor of it. And he had in his pocket a note from his mother which said, "Dear son, hurrah and vote for suffrage. Don't forget to be a good boy. Signed, your mother." Here's a poem for today, a poem from the very early 17th century by Thomas Campion, Advice to a Girl. Never love unless you can bear with all the faults of man. Men sometimes will jealous be, though but little cause they see, and hang the head as discontent, and speak what straight they will repent. Men that but one saint adore make a show of love to more. Beauty must be scorned in none, though but truly served in one. For what is courtship but disguise? True hearts may have dissembling eyes. Men, when their affairs require, must a while themselves retire. Sometimes hunt, and sometimes hawk, and never ever sit and talk. If these and such like you can bear, then like and love, and never fear. Advice to a Girl by Thomas Campion. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity, introducing a 10-minute fit test to challenge memory, attention, and problem-solving to calculate baseline scores. Learn more at lumosity.com. And by LegalZoom, providing legal help to Americans with online services, customer support, and independent legal advice. Legal help is at LegalZoom.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
This broadcast is sponsored in part by Ron's Apothecary at the Mendenhall Mall. Seasonal changes may cause muscle strains and sprains. Ron's Apothecary carries a selection of resources for recovery. First aid kits, healing ointments, braces, and more. Ron's Apothecary at the Mendenhall Mall.
You're listening to a June afternoon here on Tuesday, August 18th, 2015. It's about 8 minutes till the top of the hour. Joining me now in the studio is the one, the only, Mr. Andy Klein.
What's going on, Scott? How you doing?
It's good to have you over here. And he's holding a six-pack of the new pumpkin ale.
It's the new, brand-new pumpkin beer. It's the pumpkin, it's the seasonal. It's the pumpkin ale. And we're really excited about this beer because we got great response last year to our pumpkin porter. But not everyone's a dark beer drinker, so we decided let's go with a little bit lighter color, a little bit lighter taste, maybe not such a kind of big beer. And we kind of toned it down a little and based our new pumpkin ale off of an English mild ale. And you can still taste all the pumpkin in there. We use organic pumpkin from Washington State, nutmeg, clove, all those holiday spices and all that stuff in there. We're excited about this one.
It's part of my due diligence as a journalist.
Yes.
I took a sip of this said beer before the interview.
I forced you to.
You did.
I kind of forced it on you.
Delicious.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really nice.
I mean, we think it's like our big thing is always balance about all of our beers. So we never want to overdo the spices. We don't want to overdo the pumpkin, that kind of thing. So we try to balance it out. We have a little bit of our smoked malt in this pumpkin ale as well. So it gives it a little bit of an acrid bitterness kind of in the back end. Towards the finish, kind of cleans it a little bit, cleans the palate at the finish of the drink. So I think that's a really good one. And one of the guys at our brewery who was kind of chiefly involved with the recipe, Brent Keezy's his name, is a really excellent brewer. And he was kind of chiefly responsible for the pumpkin porter. It was his idea to kind of come up with maybe a little bit more sessionable type beer. So we brought the alcohol content down just a little bit. This one's at 6%, still quite a beer, 6% alcohol. So that's for a beer. That's noticeable. But also brought down the kind of just the overall bigness of the beer. It's not quite as hearty of a beer as the pumpkin porter was.
Yeah.
Should we open one up for the folks at home?
We should.
Let's do that. Right, here we go. Oh, and now the pour. I love that. Here's the pour.
And the part of the interview where Jeff Brown comes into the studio. I had to arm wrestle Jeff to be able to host
today. This is like the Jeff Brown dinner bell. It's like... Come on, Jeff, come on, come quick.
Here he is.
Here he is, Jeff, for a little bit of the for the pumpkin ale. Scott, you got a little already. You're good there.
Mm-hmm.
Cheers, everyone, to the new seasonal. Now, this is a seasonal that's our fall seasonal. So as summer is right now selling out, so a lot of stores actually don't even have summer left anymore. So if you see summer on the shelf and you still want some summer, I would say buy it now. And as summer is kind of transitioning out, this pumpkin ale is coming in. We sort of usually target the beginning of September or so, but summer ale sells really well, especially when the weather's nice. And we've had some good spots in nice weather past few weekends and that kind of thing. So summer ale is going pretty quick. So cheers.
Cheers.
Let me know what you guys think.
Cheers.
Here. I get that. I get the nutmeg and the clove in the aroma and a lot of the pumpkin. The pumpkin is really interesting to watch. It comes in metric ton boxes. It's pumpkin puree. It's organic pumpkin puree. And it comes from Washington State. And it's just it's interesting to see that what a metric ton of pumpkin looks like is interesting. And it's a puree, so it's really thick. So we have to pump it from the puree box into our 10-barrel system, warm it up, and get it to it, and when it's warmer, it's a little bit more liquidy, kind of. And then we can pump it into our 100-barrel system for brewing the pumpkin ale. So we have this kind of like system, these hoses going around the brewery when pumpkin's going, and it smells amazing in the brewery when the pumpkin ale is brewing.
And nice aftertaste. It's not, I was telling you before, it's not too pumpkiny. It just tastes like fall at the end.
And a lot of pumpkin ales, people they're a little sweet, people like that pumpkin latte thing that happens, and And we wanted to make sure that it really cleans at the finish. And I thought that was a really interesting thing that our brewers did, and Brent was did as well, which is get that smoked malt in there to just kind of clean it at the finish. It's not a smoky flavor. You wouldn't, like, even pick that out necessarily, that it's a smoke in there. But that's that cleansing that's happening at the back. And so you end up with a clean palate ready for another sip.
Right. And so we can get this in stores. We can get it at the brewery. Can you get this kegged?
Get it kegs at the brewery. It's on the taste. You can taste it at the brewery if you want to go to the brewery and taste them right now. It's on kegs. It's going to be around town in bars. You'll be seeing it around on draft all throughout town and all throughout all of the 17 states that we distribute.
And what about the tasting rooms? Are they getting ready to go to winter hours, or they got summer hours for a while?
Still got summer hours through September, so yeah, you know, as long as the cruise ships are in town, we're packed in there. Man, we're packed in there from 11 to 7 every day. It's crazy. Yeah, but it's always fun to get locals to come in. We love when locals come in during tourist season, by the way. I would just encourage you, come in. It's a great place to meet some tourists who are just hanging out, relaxing. You meet independent travelers, cruise ship travelers, all kinds of people in there. And it's a great way to be an ambassador for Juno, to come by the tasting room, have a beer with someone who's traveling here, and tell them all about some local tales, your latest bear adventure or whatever it might be. They love hearing that stuff, so it's always great to have locals come by the tasting room.
And it's free beer.
And by the way, free beer. Which is like,
I think you had us at free beer.
Yeah, just don't need to explain anymore. It's just free beer. Just come on by.
Well, Andy Klein, thank you so much for coming in. We have about 20 seconds left.
Thanks,
here.
Scott.
Yeah, nice to have you. Thanks for bringing in the pumpkin ale.
Absolutely.
Very nice.
Absolutely.
Nice. Going to have to drink that throughout the fall. Thanks for tuning in to a Juno afternoon today. It's currently 64 degrees at the Juno Airport, and please stay tuned for the news.